Good morning. Welcome to the show. I'm Bear with BearIndependent.com, founder and CEO of RefugeMedical.com, which we'll talk more about later. If you're new here, please consider subscribing and ringing the little bell icon. If you're not new here, please share the show with somebody you love and check to make sure that you haven't been unsubscribed by the YouTube algorithmic robots, because that happens. We're going to talk about labor strikes today and how that may or may not impact you. Bear Independent Brief, 17 April, 23. Intel from one of y'all, intel at BearIndependent.com. Quote, I was talking to my local UPS driver this afternoon. Apparently the union is in negotiations with corporate, and corporate is not budging on anything. They have until August 1st, but based on my discussion, they're anticipating a strike. This will have far-reaching repercussions. He said the union is ready to, quote, close the country down, end quote, if they don't get everything they want. Could lead to issues once summer hits, end quote. It's true. UPS Teamsters are preparing for a strike. Secretary Treasurer Fred Zuckerman said, quote, we told UPS very clearly we want a strong contract for our members, and we want it done on time. On August 1st, if we don't have the contract you deserve, there will be no UPS Teamsters working, end quote. Talks begin today, and the union is hoping to abolish the abhorred two-tier wage scale, a system that has separate tiers for part-time and full-time drivers. Unionists across the U.S. can get behind the goal. Auto workers are aiming for the same thing in their own negotiations. In fact, these negotiations may have a widespread impact. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien said at a rally, quote, we will set the tone for organized labor and the entire country with this contract, end quote. Commentary. We are going into a recession, if not a depression, if not an economic collapse predicated on the collapse of the U.S. dollar, depending on who you ask and how much tinfoil they've wrapped around their head that day. The interpretations run the gamut from it's going to be kind of bad to ah, depending on who you ask. I fall somewhere in the middle of that. I am hoping for, although hope is not a strategy, a recession. I am preparing for as if the system goes away and never returns. You know, you can wish in one hand and poop in the other and see which one gets filled up first, right? But as we enter into this period of time where the velocity of capital is incredibly low and credit is drying up and the dollar is being weakened due to inflation and potentially losing, well, not potentially, losing part of its reserve currency status around the globe and potentially losing all of its reserve currency status, that affects the way businesses can operate. It's going to affect how people get paid and what people get paid. So I think that there's a likelihood for labor unions to once again become strong, or at least to grow in their strength. Labor unions have historically skewed to one end of the political spectrum, so that's going to be interesting to observe as well. But we may see the resurgence of, air quotes, strong labor unions again, because there's going to be more and more, I believe, there's going to be more and more disdain from the laborers towards the employers because of working conditions tied to, in large part, the lack of largesse that we will experience going forward, because the fat times are ending and the lean times are coming. Whether this is biblical fat times and lean times, or this is just economic cycles or the Age of Empires, if you will. There's all these different cycles and timelines that are lining up. And that in of itself can be cause for concern. Economic cycles and war cycles and the Age of Empires and biblical cycles and signs and appointed times. It's all chaotic and not entirely comforting, to be perfectly honest. So I think we will see more labor unions and more action by labor unions on behalf of laborers going forward rather than less, given the economic situation that we find ourselves in. The president of the Joint Council 42 in L.A., Randy Kamak, wrote in the Southern California Teamster, L.A. being Los Angeles, of the Southern California Teamster, quote, "It is imperative members start putting away money in case we go on strike. The IBT has made it clear," excuse me, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, I'm assuming, "has made it clear if we do not have an agreement by July 31st, 2023, then we will be going on strike. Business agents and stewards have been getting contract unity pledge cards signed in all the work groups and reminding members to save, save, save." We'll touch on that in a moment. "Strikes are used as a last resort to get the company to agree at the negotiating table. The strength of that strike lies in the ability not to cross the picket line. The fight continues at the negotiating table and updates will be available throughout negotiations," end quote. Before the negotiations began, the publication warned that Teamsters, quote, "saw some disturbing backsliding by the company," end quote. A different strike recently shut down all three Rutgers University campuses as three unions demanded better working conditions and pay for full-time and part-time faculty, medical staffers, and students. One reason cited was Rutgers' quote, "capitalist system which feeds on inequality and insecurity and basic human needs," end quote. Now, I am a full-blown capitalist. I am not a touchy-feely person. If you've ever met me, you know that. I have emotions, I just don't use them when it comes to decision-making. In fact, oftentimes I have to remember when dealing with other people to kind of mentally walk over here and flip the emotion switch on to be less robotic. And again, it's not that I don't have emotions, I consider emotions biomechanical feedback mechanisms that tell us when something is important to us. And so I kind of disassociate from those emotions and look at them objectively and go, huh, this situation makes me feel this way. Interesting. That's an indicator. But I don't stay stuck in those feels. There are certain people in my life who are very passionate, very emotional, and they feel all of their feelings, and it's for me as a bystander, it's interesting to watch, because I'm like, oh, that's what that looks like. This person is sad or angry or concerned or whatever. I try not to feel all my feels, to be perfectly honest. Again, not to be a robot, but I use emotions as biomechanical feedback mechanisms to tell me that something is important to me. And I think part of that is, if I sit too long in those emotions, if I live in those emotions, I've learned that it's physically impossible, biologically impossible, for your brain to be operating out of emotion and logic at the same time. And I try and make logical decisions. So I don't stay stuck in the emotion feedback loop if I can help it. I try and get out of that and move on to the logical as quickly as possible. That being said, back to capitalism. I am very much so a capitalist. But I also think that companies have a duty and a responsibility to the people that they employ to take care of them, however you see fit to define take care of. And I don't mean that I need you to mandate or pass laws that I must treat people a certain way. What I mean is, for the companies that I build, the companies that I operate, the companies that I consult with, there's a fundamental understanding that the people within your organization are the most important component of that organization. Without good people, you don't have a good company. So if you begin to commoditize labor, if labor is just another line on your profit and loss statement, and that's it, that's how you see your people, is just another line on the P&L or your cash flow statement or your quarterly numbers or however you want to quantify it. They're economic figures rather than individuals. You've lost the soul of your company at that point. It is not possible for humanity to do large, impactful, extraordinary things as individuals. And you can hold up, you know, inventors and great leaders and Nobel Peace Prize winners and say, look at what this individual did. Or Steve Jobs or Elon Musk or pick somebody. Well, every one of those individuals had a team of people working with them that allowed them to accomplish the extraordinary things that they're noted for. And we as a society tend to forget that team of individuals, and that's a problem. If you don't have a strong team of individuals, you don't have the capacity to do great and noteworthy things. So for me, with our people, our labor, it's the most important part of what we do. It's not a commoditized line item. I don't view people as, well, the numbers are bad for this quarter, so fire 20% of the people in the organization so we can bump those numbers up. If you took a hit to your household income, would you fire some of your children? Oh, sorry, little Johnny. The numbers are down. You're going to have to find another house to live in right now. No, you wouldn't do that. Or at least any person of integrity wouldn't do that. Comma, I feel the same way about the people that we operate businesses with. Have the same level of commitment to them. They're part of the family. We don't just get rid of people. We don't commoditize people because the numbers don't add up. And for the last 30 years or so, in medium-sized businesses all the way up to large corporate giants, labor has been commoditized. Now, there's a push-pull here because in many cases, what the labor sector is fighting for, in my humble opinion, is a bunch of bullshit. And I think labor unions have... I've had very negative experiences with labor unions, so I'll admit my biases here. But labor unions have asked for more and more ancillary bullshit in their contracts. We can't forget that the reason we're all here is to work, is to be productive, comma. We also want to create an environment with our businesses where we will willfully engage to be productive because it's good for everybody. It's good for labor, it's good for management, it's good for everybody. And a lot of this has to do with the shift over the last 30 years or so of propping up the shareholders, producing results for shareholders. And I think there's a danger that comes when a company is operated to produce an income for the shareholders rather than to bring value to the marketplace and allow the market to determine the value of the company, allow the market to determine the strength and viability of the company. And when you build a good company full of good people that offers good products and services, the market will take care of you, which will produce the excess that you need to take care of well the people who work for you. So there's definitely a push-pull here, but the more corporatized a business or a system becomes, the more pushback there's going to be from labor unions. So as far as I say all this, I know, 5-minute rabbit hole, I say all this regarding the reasons cited for the Rutgers University campus's shutdowns. Again, quote, One reason cited was Rutgers' quote, capitalist system which feeds on inequality and insecurity in basic human needs, end quote. Yeah, I reject that. Because without capitalism, we don't have this iPhone that I'm talking to you on. We don't have all these things. All these things. This hoodie that I'm wearing, the microphone that I'm using, the coffee that I'm drinking. And does that capitalist system feed on inequality and insecurity and basic human needs? By and large, no. Maybe in certain aspects, it could, as individual companies and organizations skew more towards labor as a line item on the P&L, rather than building teams of competent, proficient individuals to produce value in the market space. But as a whole, I'm a laissez-faire capitalist. Leave me the hell alone and let me provide value, and the market will decide whether or not the value I provide is worth compensating me for. And the better I do that, the more I'll be compensated. The more people I can hire, the more products I can produce, the more customers I can service, etc. A part-time lecturer, Amy Heiger, also president of the Adjunct Faculty Union, said, quote, after sitting at the bargaining table for 10 months with Rutgers, trying to win what we believe to be fair and reasonable things like fair pay, now how do you define fair pay? Just saying, job security and access to affordable health care, and getting virtually nowhere on these core demands, we had no choice but to vote to strike, end quote. The Rutgers tri-campus strike lasted a week and successfully led to, quote, fair and amicable conclusions, end quote. Yet another strike has just begun, this time by Teamsters Local 830, a union that represents over 3,000 drivers, warehouse workers, and marketing personnel for Liberty Coca-Cola. The union's secretary-treasurer Daniel Grace said, quote, the hardworking members of Teamsters Local 830 have had enough, and frankly so have I. From the outset of our lengthy negotiations on a new contract, Liberty Coca-Cola has treated my members and the entire process with disdain. For a company that calls itself, quote, the annual top performer in sales and revenues, end quote, their last contract proposal was insulting. Compensation is a huge sticking point, as is their willingness to budge on a fair benefits package for our members. Liberty Coca-Cola knows that our local 830 members are the driving force behind their operations and success, yet they think they can treat us like second-class citizens. We won't stand for it. End quote. There's an argument to be made here that all of these are symptoms of the controlled demolition of the system. If you deflate the dollar, it's going to have obviously less purchasing power, which is going to trickle down and affect everybody who uses the U.S. dollar. It's part of why you see BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, etc., moving away from the U.S. dollar because it's losing a lot of its purchasing power. And so if you had $100 in debt and $100 last year, we had 10% inflation, it's now going to take you $110 of today's money to pay that back, right? Well, you extrapolate that out to millions, billions, trillions of dollars in debt or in revenue, it's going to take a lot more money to pay it back. That's unsustainable. How do you generate more money in an economic downturn with high inflation? With capital dried up, with credit lines of credit dried up. It's a lose-lose situation. And so a lot of these companies that are employing these labor unions may not have the revenue, while at the same time, the labor unions are demanding more revenue, better working conditions, which cost more money, healthcare, which costs money, benefits, etc., etc., etc. So it's, what move do you make at this point? The dollar sucks. What do we do? So you're likely to see downsizing here. But again, symptoms of a global economic situation. Now, I have some commentary and thoughts on these strikes. Well, we're only 20 minutes deep. Fabulous. But before We jump into commentary and talking points. Week two of our weekly initiatives. Preparedness refreshers, if you will. We spoke last week, this past Friday, about bug out bags and some tips, tricks, hints on bug out bags. I wanted to talk to you a little bit this week in week two about water. Water's super important. Obviously, you will die without it. And most preppers, at least I'll say, most of the preppers that I've met or that I follow online, the ones that I'm familiar with, do not have enough water put up. It's literally life or death. And it can be as difficult as you make it to put up a bunch of water. Now, the standard rule for water is, you'll see bandied about on the internet, is 1 gallon per person per day. Negative, Ghost Rider. No. 1 gallon is 4 of these. This is a 1-quart Nalgene bottle. It's 4 of these. I, personally, drank 6 of these yesterday. Yesterday, I went on a 3-mile ruck. I cut some trees down. And I did some fencing in addition to standard homestead chores, carrying feed sacks and all of that. I drank 6 of these, not 4. So for me, I'm already a half a gallon in the hole if I'm at a gallon of water only. So it's a minimum of 1 gallon per person per day to drink. When you're engaged in strenuous activity or it's warm outside, which Oklahoma's being bipolar as it's known for, 36 hours ago it was 88 degrees here, this morning it was 37 degrees here. So that's what, a 51 degree temperature swing in 36 hours. Thanks, Oklahoma. But I'll take it. There's lots of other reasons to subject oneself to the mood swings of Oklahoma. So yesterday, I wouldn't say it was strenuous activity, but a good workload, drank 1.5 gallons of water. Now, there's 2 other main areas where we use water that people don't tend to think about. One is hygiene. You have to wash your hands and your pits and your reproductive organs and your butt, or you're going to get sick sooner or later, or you're going to make other people sick. Hygiene, it's a must. Historically, in warfare, 2/3 of casualties come from a lack of logistics, no food, no diesel, no ammo, etc., and disease and infection. Only 1/3 is the enemy. 2/3 are our fault, 1/3 is the enemy. Well, part of that logistics is water. And without water to clean stuff, then you have disease and infection. Okay? So, water for drinking, water for hygiene, and then water for meal prep. A lot of your freeze-dried foods and your canned foods and your bug-out food and your long-term food storage, rice and beans, all takes water to cook that stuff. And so I recommend a minimum of 3 gallons per person per day. Long-term storage. We have 10,400 gallons of catchment and water storage here on property, in addition to 3 wells and 2 artesian springs and creeks. So we have a bunch of water. That's something that we're very intentional about, of having a bunch of water. I have 11 different sources of water on property. Okay. And again, it's not a prepper flex, but it just shows you how seriously we take water. So, excuse me, 3 gallons per person per day. And then you need ways to purify water. On your person, something like this. This is just a stainless steel cup. And your Nalgene bottle fits inside of it. And this will fit inside of a pouch. Or a rucksack, or a whatever. Pro tip. Listen. Hear that? take a small dish towel or a bandana, put it inside your cup, and then put your bottle inside of it. And you can use that dish towel or bandana to pre-filter. You can cover this and then set it in a stream. And as you pick up water in your cup out of a stream, a creek, a pond, whatever, the pre-filter, the rag over the top, will keep sticks and leaves and bugs and all that from getting into your water so that you can then boil this. Or you can use Aquamira tabs or any other type of water treatment. These are one of the ones that I stock right here, these Aqua tabs. And there's 100 of these tabs in here, and each tab will do a quart of water. So this is 25 gallons worth of water. Weigh nothing, takes up very little space, and throw these in your bug out bag. Again, these are Aqua tabs. They're relatively affordable. I think 100 of these is like $5, $6, something like that. And then lastly, coupled with that, from a bug out standpoint, and we'll be talking about water this entire week, these are Bic lighters. Can you make a fire with two sticks? You should be able to. Or a ferrocerium rod, or magnesium bar, or whatever you might have. Yep, you can. But these things here, take one of these, wrap it with duct tape, because duct tape's super handy to have. It also burns really well. You can pull off a couple square inches of duct tape, light that, and use that as a fire starter. And then after you've done that, take yourself a small zip top baggie, like so, and put it inside of here. This one has a hole punched through it, so I wouldn't use that one. But put it in here and then put that in your rucksack so this stays dry. If it's raining or you have to do a river crossing or you fall down into a pond or whatever, your fire making capability isn't sopping wet. Week two, initiative of week two is water. So there's just a few tips on water. Now, commentary on all of these strikes that are ongoing or will be ongoing. First thing that jumped out to me with UPS going on strike is I believe that UPS is the only carrier that's rated to carry ammunition. It's easy to apply the tinfoil to the top of your head and go, yeah, Bear, they don't want people to be able to get ammunition so that they can resist tyranny, which is why UPS is going on strike. Maybe. Or maybe that's just an unintended consequence of UPS going on strike. Either way, I believe that UPS ground is the only way that one can ship ammunition in the United States of America. So if UPS is going to go on strike, and you still need to buy some ammo, what does that mean? Yeah, things to think about. Now, the unions are telling their people who are going on strike to save, save, save now. Save money now. A little backstory on Bear. I started my first business when I was 17 years old because my mom worked for the phone company, Bell Atlantic, which then later became Verizon. And the union went on strike. What was the union? It was TWA, I think. Telecom Workers of America, something like that. They were under the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They went on strike for like 2 years. And it was rough. My dad was out of the picture. And the union paid $100 a week, which was not enough money to feed a house full of children and pay bills. So I did my senior year at high school. I went to school Monday morning from 7 a.m. till noon. And I did my entire week's worth of coursework in that 5-hour period. Got in, banged it out, liaised with all my teachers, and by noon I left school. I went to the woods with a chainsaw. And I started cutting timber. I started my first business with a $500 Ford Ranger, 2.3 liter four-cylinder and a five-speed transmission with wood sideboards built up on the back and a $200 chainsaw, $700 in assets. And I worked and I worked and I worked and I busted my ass to be able to split firewood and sell logs and do tree removal for people to produce the cash revenue that I needed in order to take care of my mom and my little sisters at the age of 17. So again, when I say that I've had negative experiences with labor unions, yeah. That being said, we got through it. But there was not enough revenue coming in from the union in order to pay the bills. That was a long strike. And it created a lot of animosity between the members of the union who were on strike and the members of the union who ideologically wanted to be on strike but couldn't afford to not go to work. Scabs, right? And then, of course, you have people trying to work other jobs under the table, off the books, so that they can get cash, so that they can pay their bills because the union's on strike, yada, yada, yada. So I find it interesting that these union leaders are telling their people to save, save, save. As compared to, oh, you got an Amex or a MasterCard or a Visa, just use that. That again gets back to the strength of the US dollar. How many people have the ability to save, save, save right now? Hey, save up 3 months worth of living expenses because the union's going to go on strike. So it makes me wonder how long that strike could possibly last before the members of the union simply don't have the revenue to stay afloat and have to go back to work. In this economic climate, how long can a strike last before the union members have to come back to the negotiating table because they're out of money? Another potential fallout here for both small businesses and big businesses are service interruptions. UPS ships a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. So if you have a small business and you use UPS to ship with, you'd probably need to be looking for an alternative carrier. If UPS goes offline, if UPS goes offline, FedEx is going to be swamped. USPS already sucks. They're difficult to do business with. They're slow. They're expensive. Their tracking is inaccurate. Postal workers in, at least in rural areas, man, they mean real well, but they're just not super detail oriented in my experience. It's a challenge working with USPS. What other options are there? So, if you're a business that uses UPS to ship things, think about alternatives now. At least have a plan to pivot if needed. And then big business interruptions. All the stuff you order off the internet, who's going to bring it to your doorstep if UPS is on strike? And literally, what did they say? Let me scroll back a minute here. He said, the union is ready to close the country down if they don't get everything they want. Could lead to issues once summer hits. Ready to close the country down. So your automatic refills from your pharmacy, or your dog food that's on Subscribe and Save, or whatever it is, right? Think about that. The supply chain and service interruptions that that's going to represent. It could have potential ramifications for you and your household, or you and your business. And then lastly, these labor strikes, which I touched on earlier. These are economic indicators. It's a huge economic indicator, honestly. And the United States is not the only place where we're seeing this happen. It's happened in France and in Germany and other places in Europe, etc. It's a global thing. These economic indicators could potentially turn into civil unrest indicators, depending on how far this thing goes. Civil unrest essentially being defined as people behaving badly. So, having plans for not being where people are behaving badly would be a good idea. Bug out plan, bug out indicators. That's the brief for today. If you're one of those people that jumps off when it's time to talk about how to support the show that's extracting value from this free platform, toodles, beat feet. For everybody else, let's talk about how to support the show briefly. Links in the description to everything I'm about to talk about. On Patreon this morning, we discussed grid down and EMP immediate action drills. If the grid went down right now, what would I do? If an EMP went off right now, what would I do? That video is up on Patreon. That's worth the $5 per month alone right there. There's a minimum of 20 exclusive pieces of content per month on Patreon at a minimum. Sometimes it trends in the direction of 40, 50, 60 pieces of exclusive content per month on Patreon. Go check that out. It is not an I love me, you should love me too page. That's where the vast majority of the value that Bear Independent brings is at, is on Patreon. And it's $5 a month. Refuge Medical, KIO3 potassium iodide in stock. We got a significant shipment of that. A lot of y'all reached out. There were several hundred people on the waiting list for potassium iodide, concerned about warheads on foreheads. So we brought in a significant shipment of that. We still have some of that in stock. So if you're concerned about warheads on foreheads, refugemedical.com. We are up to 72 lives saved by Refuge Medical equipment or personnel or alumni. 72. The most recent life saved was a Refuge training alum who was cutting, was with somebody who was cutting timber. And that somebody, it was early in the morning, it was dark, and that somebody put a chainsaw into their leg, cut all the way down to the bone, the femur, completely severed the femoral artery, and the guy, Zach, good morning, Zach, who was able to save his life, had a cat tourniquet, was trying to apply the cat tourniquet. The casualty, the person who was injured, was fighting them over applying the tourniquet because of old doctrine. He was afraid that his leg would fall off if he put a tourniquet on him, which that's not the case. Come to Refuge Training Responder 1 and we'll teach you all about how that's not the case. Or watch my trauma medicine playlist here for free on YouTube. It's not the case. So the guy knocked the tourniquet out of Zach's hand, and Zach luckily had an S-mark bandage. An S-mark bandage is basically an unbranded version of the SWAT T, stretch wrap and tuck tourniquet. And he was able to use that to stem the arterial bleeding. Got him to the hospital, looked at him. He was inspected, triaged by personnel at the hospital. The femoral artery had been completely severed and had retracted halfway up his thigh, which is why we teach high and tight with tourniquets. So, life saved, number 72, chainsaw accident. All of our kits are HSA and FSA eligible. We make our stuff here in the United States of America. For example, this is the ARC, the Advanced Ripaway Kit. This one is in red. They come in cool guy colors as well, green and multi-cam and coyote tan, etc. And you'll see there's couple of straps here on the back. These straps are designed to go around the headrest in your vehicle. There's also a whole bunch of malice clips here so you can mount this to your war belt, your plate carrier, your chest rig, your rucksack, your whatever you might have. But you can use these straps to mount this on the back of the headrest of your vehicle that if you need it, you can pop that and you can rip this off and now you're holding a first aid kit in your hand. We also make a dangler for this. You can run it on a chest rig, which I do. Picture says 1,000 words, stand by. Velocity Systems Mayflower with an ARC on a dangler. See that? Super cool. So, a lot of functionality and configurability with this kit, whether it's war fighting or partisan resistance or law enforcement or civilian applications, the ARC, the Advanced Ripaway Kit. Now, so it has this mounting platform that you can mount headrest or tactical gear or inside your skid steer or whatever. Hang it up on the wall in your wood shop. And then you pop this open and made in America, guaranteed forever, 72 lives saved. And it's just chock full of all the goodness you need to treat 1 to 2 casualties. So this will work as an IFAC, an individual first aid kit, or as a buddy kit, or as a general purpose trauma medicine kit. These are not boo-boo kits. If Susie falls off her bike, you're probably not going to need this kit. We make boo-boo kits for when Susie falls off her bike. If somebody gets shot, stabbed, blown up, or in a bad car wreck, this will do everything you need it to do and nothing you don't need it to do. And so like in this pocket up here, you've got chest seals and quick clot and an S-mark bandage and fold flat duct tape. And for example, that's the S-mark bandage right there, compression wrap. That's what was used to save life number 72. So could you use this to do yoga and resistance training with? Yes, you could. Could you use it to save a life? Absolutely. Again, you've got quick clot here, you've got a flat trauma bandage, chest seals, etc. Your shears, your Sharpie, you've got a committee on TCCC recommended witness tourniquet, in this case the soft T tourniquet on the outside. And then down here you've got more chest seals, wound packing gauze, gloves, it's nasal pharyngeal airway, etc., etc. down here in that pocket. And what I like about this kit and what you'll see in the functionality of a lot of our individual first aid kits is it's designed in such a way that when I need this, it will come off my body so I can get it out where I need it, throw it on the ground next to the casualty and go to work. I hate first aid kits that say that stay stuck to your body. That's the ARC, the Advanced Ripaway Kit from RefugeMedical.com. Your promo code for free shipping is BearNation for free shipping. Let's do that before all the, Teamsters and delivery companies go on strike. Highly recommended. In stock today, shipping fast. So, our shipping department is back open again today. We were on a shipping pause because of the Moedim, the High Holy Days. But it is Monday and everybody is back to work. And you order it today, it'll ship today. When I say it's in stock, that means I have it under my roof. And it will ship immediately. Let's see, what else? Refuge training crew is in Waco today. Training in Waco. There are a handful of slots left in Boise, Idaho. So if you're anywhere near Boise, Idaho, recommend strongly that you go to that class. That is as far north and west as we will be going in the near future. So Boise, Idaho, check that out. Let's see. Yeah, that's refugetraining.com. Or there's classes elsewhere in the country as well. So go to Refuge Training, find the class that's nearest to you, and sign up. GrindstoneMinistries.com. Grindstone is back on site in Rolling Fork, Mississippi today. We have a crew down there that is wrapping up on the commitments that we made to individuals in the community down there, to demo houses, clean up debris, finish up the relief portion of that storm so that it can move into the recovery portion. Relief is the immediate and recovery is the long term, and we do disaster relief. We had to pull off a site because there was so much rain and so much mud that we couldn't move our equipment. I was getting 60,000 pound front end loaders stuck in the mud. Skid steers, tracked skid steers stuck in the mud. Excavators stuck in the mud. Just couldn't operate. Well, we have people down there today. Back in Rolling Fork, Mississippi this week. On site, on target. Doing what we said we would do for the people who are there that we made commitments to. So that is ongoing. If you'd like to support that, you can visit GrindstoneMinistries.com. Also, you may have seen our friend, the Angry Prepper, wearing his Grindstone Ministries shirt on Tucker Carlson. That was super cool. Thanks, bro. Appreciate you. You'll also find links in the description to Caleb House Swag, to our brother Rex and our brother Saw, their t-shirts as provided through Sanctified Supply Co., a portion of the proceeds of which go towards building Caleb House, which is our juvenile human trafficking survivor restoration facility, which is a bunch of $50 words, meaning a place where we take kids who have been trafficked and serially raped by assholes and put them back together again. So if you're into that, you can find us at grindstoneministries.com. I appreciate y'all very much. Hey, please share the show with somebody that you love. That helps us combat the YouTube algorithmic robots. And again, if you're new here, please consider subscribing. Ring the little bell icon. I'll see y'all soon. Have a blessed day. Shalom.